Why you can't just compare one country's economic growth rate to another's.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Adrienne Hill. China today announced that the country's economy grew by 9.2% last year, and China's economy is growing faster than the economies of all of Europe and the U.S., much faster. By comparison, the U.S. economy grew at a rate of less than 2% for most of 2011. But as Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reports, it's not quite fair to compare one GDP to another.
Some years, India's GDP growth runs neck and neck with China's. Sometimes economies like Paraguay's grow faster than China's. And according to economist Arthur Kroeber, here's why none of that matters.
What's significant about China is it's been growing at around 10% a year for 30 years in a row, which is the best growth performance that any country has ever had.
Any country ever. Back in its economic heyday 100 years ago, the U.S. economy was growing by around 4 or 5% a year. But Kroeber says that, too, is a dangerous comparison. That's because the U.S. was one of the first countries to industrialize. 100 years later, China finally got around to doing the same, and it inherited a lot of the know-how from the West.
So the later you come into the game, the more stuff you can just borrow or copy from the people who came before at very, very low cost. And that means that you can grow a lot faster.
But don't focus too much on growth, says Kroeber. Three decades ago, China's economy was small, but it was growing incredibly fast. Now, China's growth is starting to slow down, but its economy is the second largest in the world. So that means every percentage point of growth is worth exponentially more. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Now to Hollywood, which may be getting a new union. No, not another Kardashian wedding or a new Brangelina-style power couple. Instead, one that could change the labor landscape for the industry. After years of courting, the two main actors' unions have worked out a deal to tie the knot. Marketplace's Amy Scott joins us now live to help explain. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning.
So first, tell us about these unions. Why would they want to merge?
Well, SAG, the Screen Actors Guild, historically represented film actors. The other union is the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. But of course, there's a lot of overlap in the industry. The two unions share more than 40,000 members. I spoke earlier with Dan Mitchell, a professor emeritus at UCLA. He says it makes sense to join forces.
What unions are ultimately for is negotiating better deals for their members. And if you have different unions with different demands and competing with each other, they're less effective at negotiating with the employers.
A few years ago, for example, AFTRA pulled out of a partnership with SAG and ended up cutting its own deal with TV producers, which was said to really hurt SAG's clout.
But as I understand it, even before that partnership failed, they did try this merger thing before, right? So what's different now?
Yeah, they've been talking about merging actually for decades. The last attempt about 9 years ago was pretty narrowly defeated. But after that ugly battle I mentioned from a few years ago, there's been more support for joining forces. Everybody is trying to figure out how to make money in this age of digital media. And the thinking here is that performers need a powerful union to make sure they're not left out.
Marketplace's Amy Scott, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Now, let's do the numbers. Markets are up this morning. The NASDAQ is up over a point. Over one percentage point. It's at 2,741. The S&P 500 is up 0.8%. The Dow is up 122 points at 12,544. We've got mixed results from the financial sector this morning. Citigroup says its fourth quarter income slipped 11% because of investment banking losses, but Wells Fargo fourth quarter profit rose 20% on the strength of the consumer side of its business. Turns out the growth in the Chinese economy we talked about earlier is also pushing cognac sales up. 2011 was the best year on record for the spirit.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Invest Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland, a European location offering a workforce that's well-educated, smart, and driven. More at investni.com/invest. By GoToMeeting by Citrix, bringing high-definition video conferencing to online meetings for face-to-face collaboration. More at GoToMeeting.com. and by Constant Contact, combining email marketing and social media for more customers and more time back on the clock. Learn more at ConstantContact.com.
Now to Hong Kong, home to one of the world's 10 biggest stock exchanges and some of the world's shortest trading hours. As the BBC's Andrew Wood reports, those long lunch breaks are under attack.
It's not so much Occupy Wall Street as Occupy Lunchtime. Hong Kong's one of the few major stock exchanges in the world that stops trading for a midday meal break. It's a nice, leisurely 90 minutes. And some stockbrokers were pretty angry last year when it was cut from 2 hours. Now they've joined forces with unions and even restaurant owners to resist a further cut in March to just an hour. This week, 1,000 placard-waving protesters besieged the stock exchange to make their point. But its chairman, Ronald Arculi, says that the lunch break needs to be cut if Hong Kong's going to keep ahead of longer-working rivals.
If we did not do it, I fear that we will lose some competitive edge, you know, to our competitive rivals.
Even though Hong Kong is one of the world's biggest markets, it still has a lot of rather small, traditionally minded outfits that prefer to do business in a gentler way. In the film Wall Street, the villainous trader Gordon Gekko famously said that lunch is for wimps. Goodness knows what he would have made of Hong Kong. In Hong Kong, I'm the BBC's Andrew Wood for Marketplace.
And finally, what makes a hipster? Is it the Buddy Holly glasses or the skinny jeans or listening to the really cool band that no one else is listening to? The answer is yes, sort of, at least to that last question. Men's Health reports that a new study finds that when a lot of friends start liking the same no-name band that a hipster does, a hipster finds another band. Not so much with classical music lovers. It reminds me of a t-shirt I saw once that said, "I listen to bands that don't even exist yet." In Los Angeles, I'm Adrienne Hill. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
Remember Mr. Rogers and those factory tours he did during the heyday of U.S. manufacturing?
I'd like to show you some people making crayons. Let's come along. I have a film of it here.
I'm Tess Vigeland. We'll hear what happened to some of those factories next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.